Gary, I think it's ironic that we're talking to Pete Best in Cleveland, where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is.
I know.
Some might think he just doesn't want to leave the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And, Pete, maybe you belong there.
Well, let's just turn around and say that's one for discussion.
Well, thanks a million for talking with us today. And we have a program every weekend called Pop Culture Connection here at the radio station. And Terry, as you know, is a Beatle expert. He really is. He knows a lot about you.
No, I play one on the radio. No, Pete, congratulations on your tour. And I understand later on this month you'll be doing something that your former bandmate will be doing next year, and that is When I'm 64 tour.
That's right.
Isn't that right?
Yeah, next month.
Yes.
On the 24th.
Yes.
Well, I've achieved the grand old age of 64, yes.
Uh-huh. Listen, you know, every time that you're interviewed, and I saw your piece in the Toronto Sun a few weeks back, it always ends up the first question that you're asked is, that why do you think you were asked to leave the Beatles? I'm going to save that to the end. How about that? Does that make you feel a little better?
You can ask me any time you want. I still haven't got the right answer.
I was going to say, he may not answer it. But.
No, but you know what I wanted to ask you first off is... going on now 45 years since you, you know, were starting in the band, how do you look back on the whole thing? Has it been something that has been the highlight of your life or one of the biggest disappointments?
No, I turn around and say it was a, I wouldn't turn around and say it was the highlight. It's been one of the highlights, but it hasn't been a disappointment, far from it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because regardless of what happened, you know, it was a learning curve. I had 2 great years with them. And because of that, you know, I've lived a different, I suppose you could turn around and say, different lifestyle from them. And when you look back in hindsight, you know, I feel very pleased and very happy with what I've achieved over the last 45 years. And of course, with, you know, having the band back on the road again now and the band in itself getting great acclaim, it's one of those things. I mean, you know, lots of things in life have compensated for it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look back in hindsight, you're proud of what you've achieved. You've still got your health and happiness. You've still got a... always have been a great family, man. I've still got a great family surrounding me. Grandchildren, which I totally idolize and spoil. And a great band with great musicians from Liverpool. So, you know, I don't think I'm doing too bad at the present moment in time.
So would it be difficult for you, Pete, to pick one highlight?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you know, it depends what you turn around and say. Highlights, I mean, you know, there's different highlights. There's different, I suppose you could turn around and say, priorities. But to actually sort of turn around and say one highlight, I mean, highlight could have been the birth of my first daughter. Highlight could have been, you know, the marriage. Highlight could have been the birth of my first grandchild. It goes on and on, my first record release. You know, but to actually turn around and say that was the highlight of my life, that would be difficult. That would be difficult.
That's different than highlight of your career, that's for sure. There's highlights in your career and highlights in your personal life. So, well,
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, good, good answer, yeah.
That's for sure. Pete, let me take you down to Strawberry Fields one more time. 40 years ago, was that possibly your lowest period in your life? Say around 1965 when it started to... really settle into you that you had, you know, missed out on one of the most amazing feats in entertainment industry history?
I think, I mean, if you were talking about the suicide attempt, you know, around about the mid-60s, it was something which a lot of people sort of turned around and said, maybe you were unaware of it, but it was because, you know, there was depression or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that, to be quite honest, because, you know, at the time, and I've thought about it many, many times, you know, and I think it was very much a case of you don't know why you did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't turn around and say it was depression. You can't turn around and say because you were angry. All it was is you did something which was pretty stupid. And I was fortunate, you know, that my younger brother and my mother were there on hand to actually save me. And they gave me a good talking to.
Yeah, but
and
then
they turned around and said,
but then again, Pete, you know, in your defense, when Beatlemania was at its height in 1965, you know, and you're seeing all these press reports where, you know, John and Paul and George and Ringo are like deities, and you knew them personally, so you knew their faults and their picadillos and, you know, their humanness. Mm-hmm. This must have just drove you crazy.
Well, I mean, there comes a time when you got to switch off, and that's why I think... you know, where people sort of turn on and try and attribute that that attempt, you know, to the fact that I was surrounded and could have been part of it. You know, I was reflecting back all the time. My defense to that is very much a case of that, you know, I'd moved on from it. Hmm. And that's why I turned around and say, you know, there were different things. I was still pursuing a musical career. We were still, you know, striving. We were still achieving things. You know, we were, you know, still a pretty dominant force in our own right. We got a recording contract. We were on the verge of breaking through and all the other bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like...
Terry, I think it's ironic that we're talking to Pete Best in Cleveland, where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is.
I know.
Some might think he just doesn't want to leave the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And, Pete, maybe you belong there.
Well, let's just turn around and say that's one for discussion.
Well, thanks a million for talking with us today. And we have a program every weekend called Pop Culture Connection here at the radio station. And Terry, as you know, is a Beatle expert. He really is. He knows a lot about you.
No, I play one on the radio. No, Pete, congratulations on your tour. And I understand later on this month you'll be doing something that your former bandmate will be doing next year, and that is When I'm 64 tour.
That's right.
Isn't that right?
Yeah, next month.
Yes.
On the 24th.
Yes.
Well, I've achieved the grand old age of 64, yes.
Uh-huh. Listen, you know, every time that you're interviewed, and I saw your piece in the Toronto Sun a few weeks back, it always ends up the first question that you're asked is, that why do you think you were asked to leave the Beatles? I'm going to save that to the end. How about that? Does that make you feel a little better?
You can ask me any time you want. I still haven't got the right answer.
I was going to say, he may not answer it. But
no, but you know what I wanted to ask you first off is... going on now 45 years since you, you know, were starting in the band, how do you look back on the whole thing? Has it been something that has been the highlight of your life or one of the biggest disappointments?
No, I turn around and say it was I wouldn't turn around and say it was the highlight. It's been one of the highlights, but it hasn't been a disappointment, far from it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because regardless of what happened, you know, it was a learning curve. I had 2 great years with them. And because of that, you know, I've lived a different, I suppose you could turn around and see, different lifestyle from them. And when you look back in hindsight, you know, I feel very pleased and very happy with what I've achieved over the last 45 years. And of course, with, you know, having the band back on the road again now and the band in itself getting great acclaim, it's one of those things. I mean, you know, lots of things in life have compensated for it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look back in hindsight, you're proud of what you've achieved. You've still got your health and happiness. You've still got being a great family man, I've still got a great family surrounding me, grandchildren, which I totally idolize and spoil, and a great band with great musicians from Liverpool. So, you know, I don't think I'm doing too bad at the present moment in time.
So would it be difficult for you, Pete, to pick one highlight?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you know, it depends what you turn around and say highlights. I mean, you know, there's different highlights. There's different, I suppose you could turn around and say, priorities. But to actually sort of turn around and say one highlight, I mean, highlight could have been the birth of my first daughter. Highlight could have been, you know, the marriage. Highlight could have been the birth of my first grandchild. It goes on and on, my first record release. You know, but to actually turn around and say that was the highlight of my life, that would be difficult. That would be difficult.
That's different than highlight of your career, that's for sure. There's highlights in your career and highlights in your personal life. So, well,
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, good, good answer, yeah.
That's for sure. Pete, let me take you down to Strawberry Fields one more time. 40 years ago, was that possibly your lowest period in your life? Say around 1965 when it started to really settle into you that you had, you know, missed out on one of the most amazing feats in entertainment industry history?
I think, I mean, if you were talking about the suicide attempt, you know, around about the mid-60s, it was something which a lot of people sort of turned around and said, maybe you were unaware of it, but it was because, you know, there was depression or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that, to be quite honest, because, you know, at the time, and I've thought about it many, many times, you know, and I think it was very much a case of you don't know why you did it. You know, you can't turn around and say he was depressed. You can't turn around and say because you were angry. All it was is you did something which was pretty stupid. And I was fortunate, you know, that my my younger brother and my mother were there on hand to actually save me. And they gave me a good talking to.
Yeah, but
and
then...
they turned around and said...
But then again, Pete, you know, in your defense, when Beatlemania was at its height in 1965, you know, and you're seeing all these press reports where, you know, John and Paul and George and Ringo are like deities, and you knew them personally, so you knew their faults and their picadillos and, you know, their humanness. Mm-hmm. This must have just drove you crazy.
Well, I mean, there comes a time when you got to switch off, and that's why I think... You know, where people sort of turn on and try and attribute that that attempt, you know, to the fact that I was surrounded and could have been part of it. You know, I was reflecting back all the time. My defense to that is very much a case of that, you know, I'd moved on from it. And that's why I turned around and say, you know, there were different things. I was still pursuing a musical career. We were still, you know, striving. We were still achieving things. You know, we were, you know, still... a pretty dominant force in our own right. We got a recording contract. We were on the verge of breaking through and all the other bits and pieces. But, you know, like everything else, when you ask someone, you know, why they did something, why they did, you know, try to attempt suicide, they can't give you a logical answer.
Because
it doesn't make sense. You know, it's there was no premeditation. It was a whim.
Yeah.
You know, it was just something which is like, I'm going to do it. I'm fortunate. I survived.
Yeah. Right? Thank
and,
God.
You know, and as a result of that, you know, I made a vow that, you know, nothing like that would ever happen again.
Pete, you...
And I think one of the, you know, the beauties of it was, and I think what brought it home for me, was I was married at that time. And they, you know, my mother and my younger brother turned around and said, Pete, you are depriving your wife of a husband and your daughter of a father.
Yeah.
And I think they were the key words.
Very true. Pete, you've heard about Tony Bramwell's book, Magical Mystery Tours.
I have heard of it. I haven't actually... or, you know, read any of the critique on it at all yet?
Yeah, well, I've read it and I've reviewed it, and we interviewed him here on this program and asked him specifically about why he thought that you were no longer a member of the Beatles after 1962. And it was his opinion. Now, you remember, this is Tony Bramwell. Tony Bramwell's opinion was that the other Beatles did not feel that you had the personality. You had the Adam drum beat, they knew that, but they felt that you were of a depressive nature and you brought other people down, and, well, George said you didn't smile enough.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things, everyone to their each, you know, their own opinion. You know, for Grandma to actually turn around and say that, I mean, you know, George turning around and saying I didn't smile enough. I wouldn't turn around and say that George at that time was the most smiling person that appeared on stage. Right? He was quiet. Right? But to turn around and say I was of a depressive nature and I brought other people down, that's the fans in Liverpool. Long before Tony Bramwell got involved and let them answer for it. And, in fact, let's take it a stage further. Within the DVD Best of the Beatles, right? Which is on release now. And
yes, we got a copy. Right? Yep.
Listen to what the people have to turn around and say in that. There you're talking to musicians, you're talking to club owners, you're talking to people who were around at the time, Cynthia Lennon, Stu Sutcliffe's sister, all the Hamburg Brigade. Listen to what they have to say. And if that is picturing me or painting me as being a depressive person, then I plead the Fifth Amendment. Okay.
Well, you know, John Lennon did say that they were cowards for the way they treated you.
Well, yeah, I mean... it takes a brave man to stand up and say that, and John did, and I thanked him for it. And it was like very much a case of, you know, again, it goes back to, you know, if Bramwell is sniping, you know, and saying that this is what he feels, take into consideration what John said. You know, that he was a coward, he should have supported me, which meant that somewhere along the line he didn't agree with what was happening.
Pete, one thing that I wanted to touch on was you were quite close with Neil Aspinall in the early days. Since then, you've had a falling out with him?
No, far from it.
Oh, okay, well, then that's... Well, can you explain a little bit on that?
Tony Bramwell hasn't said that in his book.
No, but that's a report that I read.
No, I mean, that is wherever you read it, it's total futility.
Okay.
I mean, you know, Neil and I were great friends. Yes, he is, you know, the main man at the Apple Corporation at the present moment. We still see one another, but there is a strict rule. You know, we don't talk business.
Okay.
We are still friends and we socialize, and it's as simple as that.
Okay, I'm glad to clear that up.
Thanks so much, Pete.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
See you guys. Gonna find her.